You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Caroline Wright. Caroline is an amazing cook. She's a food writer and stylist. She writes articles and cookbooks and is just a really hardworking freelancer who inspires me very much. Caroline is a friend of my husband's from high school days in Florida, and I am grateful that when they reconnected in New York around the time that he and I started dating, I was welcomed by her as family, and she has been such a joy to know ever since. She's someone who brings a community together with friendship and her amazing food, no matter what she's doing, and now that she lives in Seattle, I miss her gathering so much. She's currently on a book tour, promoting her new cookbook, Cake Magic, so we Skyped between New York and Minneapolis for this conversation. So there are a few times when the Skype froze, but we managed to pick up the conversation right back where we left off. I hope you enjoy the 41st episode of The Compass. Describe to people what you do. Like, if someone asks you what you do, what do you say?
Well, I feel like I always tell them, you know, that I write recipes for a living, but it's, you know, a little more than that, because I'm a cook who writes and a writer who cooks, and it's a job that people don't really know exists, so I'm always explaining it. Mm-hmm. I also style food for a living, so I make things look pretty for pictures. So, yeah, it's a complicated but cool, nebulous job, I would say.
Well, I look at what you do as extremely artistic, and I know you have so many, your hands in so many different things, and you've been involved in so many different artistic things, like, throughout your life. But for what you're doing right now, like, what do you do when you find yourself going to the dark side with what you do? And what is the dark side for you right now?
Well, there's such a... I mean, I do feel... Thank you for saying that it's artistic, because I do feel like there is an underpinning of that for me, for sure. Because, you know, I'm telling stories through food, and, you know, I'm connecting with people on this very primal level. And everybody has a connection to food, and it brings out all kinds of really lovely things in people. And that's definitely, that is the point of entry for me as a cook and a writer, for sure. The dark side for me, it's sad, because I think, just like, you know, actors, most of the people you have on this podcast, you know, there's a problem of, you know, momentum and inertia. Like, you have to keep, you're only as good as your next thing. And there is that pressure, and that's a really scary place to be in, because it doesn't allow for a lot of, you know, failure, or, you know, there's so much pressure to have, like, a style and no...
Oh, no, you froze. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
So much pressure to have a style.
Yeah, it's there's so much pressure to have a style and, like, a way of cooking and a way of writing, and that's... not great, because, you know, sometimes you're figuring that out as you go, which certainly has been my case. And only now, in the past couple of, like, past year or so, can I've really honed in on what that means to me. But it's just hard to be out productive, you know, while you're in that, you know, critical space. And so the dark side, I would say, is like the lonely place of not knowing what your next project is, and, you know, not knowing, you know, if people care about what you're saying, or like if the food that you're making is working for people. Like, there's, it's a hard place to be in, for sure.
So when you're having one of those days where you're not feeling inspired, or you're feeling like you're not getting the feedback from the world that you desire, what can help you take yourself out of that place?
Well, I mean, it still is food, so obviously I have a love of food, and it makes people happy. So even if I'm not connecting to, like, this ideal reader or this ideal market or whatever, you know, I can still have a dinner party and have people I love over and, you know, give people hugs and make dishes that they like. And that has really brought me through a lot. And how that actually manifested in my career at really dark times was, like, silly things like a blog, you know, something where I had very low expectations for, you know, return of any sort of, you know, definitely monetary sort, but certainly any sort of professional sort. Those things actually ended up helping me, like, find my voice and find my footing in really, really momentous ways.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like if you take away that pressure of, oh, this is the thing that's going to make me all my money, then you can just relax and express yourself fully.
For sure.
It's finding a way to be able to do both at the same time that's tricky.
Yeah. Cookbooks, it stinks, because that's what I'm doing now. I mean, it's amazing, but the part of cookbooks that stinks in terms of getting your next gig is it's so competitive. You know, the people who are getting the big deals are people who are already famous. But there's the catch 22 is, like, you can't. I'm a person who writes recipes. Like, why would anyone know what it is that I do,
right?
You know? So, like, how do you get out there enough but not, you know, be cheesy and still find who you are?
Can you just tell so the listeners know a little bit about the book that you're promoting right now?
Yes. You're literally speaking to me while I'm on book tour, away from my life and away from my home kitchen.
Is it driving you crazy to stay in hotels without a kitchen?
Yes. And eating road food. Road food constantly on book tour is one of those things that, you know, I'm learning an awful lot about being slightly fancier right now. It's true. I have a babysitter. There's someone who babysits me. Did you know that there's something called a media handler? There's someone who takes me from my events to my hotels, like, gets me, does my bidding. It's super weird.
Make sure you don't run away.
Yeah, literally, because it costs so much money for them to send me out on these things. So, you know, there's someone who can account for all of my movements. Yeah.
And this is all through your publisher who organizes the press tour?
Yeah, exactly. So I have a publicist for this book. And so to answer your original question, I'm promoting Cake Magic, which has been really cool because my first book was like a savory book. And so everyone's been asking me, like, oh, why cakes? Like, why now? And so I've had to come up with answers to those questions, which sound a little bit like bullshit at the beginning, but I have come to really internalize them, and it's made a lot of sense for me, is that it's a very, you know, service-oriented book. It's meant to make everyone be able to make a cake, and literally everyone from, like, vegans, gluten-free people, starting from, like, an at-home, basically, box mix that you make, and you use, like, 3 cups for this cake and 4 cups for that cake. But I've really been connecting with a lot of people who are just, like, new bakers, really intimidated. And, you know, my first book, $20 20-Minute Meals, is similar in the sense that it's trying to get people to make food, scratch food at home, fast, but and it's very technique-driven, you know, it's very simple, good stuff. And that's what the cake book is, too. It's just one's the sweet side, one's the savory side. And that is what I have come to answer as my style, is realizing, you know, I really like giving people, like, taking away the excuses to cook and bake and just do a really good job of telling the story and writing really good recipes. And once I've centered it in that place, I'm like, oh, now I feel like I could do, like, any book that I want now. I could do, like, a I don't even right. know what's next.
Because you have that strong point of view that you've articulated for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. I feel like I have my subject now. At getting in contact with, you know, just having like these really like eager, open-faced people coming up to me and telling me things that they respond to about my work, and that has been really helpful. That sounds like really gross and ego-driven. That's not where I'm coming from. It's just. It's been a really interesting experience interacting with more and more people who like actually have their hands on my work.
Yeah. I think especially when you're doing something where you spend a lot of time in the making of the book, like a time alone testing these recipes and in your kitchen. So to have people actually tell you, oh, I'm using this tool is really helpful to me. That's great.
It's been really, and cake, it actually really has been so fun.
Like, yeah, it's a fun topic.
Yeah, like people show up and they are usually like, all my events have been like slices of cake and glasses of champagne. And I'm like, yeah, this is easy. I can talk to you, your crowd. Like, this is great.
Well, and cake is something that's usually associated with a celebration.
Yeah.
Which totally goes into what you were saying about stories and being involved in people's lives. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really cool. Well, Frankie and I have been talking about we need to order it. We're really excited to get
it. Well, I got to make a cake for you. I miss you guys.
I miss you too. And I mean, what you were saying about having the power to invite people into your home and just have a dinner party when you're feeling down, like that's something I miss so much about you living in New York is you were the best at bringing people together. And just organizing the friends night where everyone comes over and you make some amazing food and everyone's just chilling and it gets everyone out of their own little habitat to socialize in person. And I really admire that about you and I miss it.
Oh, well, I miss it too. Frankly, after having two kids, it hasn't been entirely obvious how to rein that back in, but yeah. I'm finding that happy. There is an end in sight soon in Seattle. We've created a structure where I can start to do that again, which is actually very, very helpful for me in my work. Having a place that, you know, I'm getting very, very busy. I'm working on my third book already. I'm working on a different project, like a sort of fourth book for someone else. And so I'm like just exploding with the amount of work that I'm doing and being able to have people over for my next project, which is like a Spanish cookbook. Uh-huh. And it's the idea of having dinner parties with paella.
Yes.
I'm so excited. I am really, it's going to be awesome.
Can we talk a little bit about this just huge transition that your life has gone through in the last, what is it? 4 years, three, like, yeah, I guess.
Kids?
Yeah.
Since he's turning four.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Since getting pregnant and leaving New York, and now you guys were in Texas, and now you're in Seattle. And I know that location is so important to you, and I'm just curious about how geography affects people artistically. So what has that migration been like for you, and how has it affected your work?
Well, it is hard. In the beginning, it was really hard because, you know, the bottom sort of fell out of my work. I was feeling like I was hitting a stride where I was working a lot in New York. And so what I do is called, you know, Food Editorial. And the hub of Food Editorial was really in New York. All the magazines, all the book publishers, everyone was there.
And you were freelancing.
And I was getting contacts and rising and struggling as a freelancer. I was getting to be a busy person. And then suddenly I found out that I was knocked up and then I had to leave.
Geography and also huge topic, kids.
Yes. Those things happened at exactly the same time. So for me, one can't really be extracted from the other. But so yeah, the bottom falling out of my life and leaving New York and all of my friends and everything that I had known. But the crazy story is that it's so crazy. So you might remember this. I left New York literally on the last day that I could fly because I love New York so much. I had no intention of leaving ever. I always wanted to raise my kids there. It's just this magical, loving place for me. And so, but cookbooks are what I always wanted to do by the time that I had kids. But I didn't actually have anything going in that direction by the time I was knocked up. And that was like the one last thing. And I was like, oh, shit, this is early. Like, I need a couple more years. So what happened was, is literally, and this isn't bullshit. I don't know if you remember this, but I turned on my phone when the wheels touched down in Dallas, and I had an email from this agent that signed me like 5 years before when I was like some unknown blogger, just like a random thing. And I had self-published that $20 20-minute meals book, which right. used to be a column on my blog, and I was shutting down my blog, and I turned it into this self-published book. And I mean, I like took all the photos on a Coolpix camera. Like, I wasn't expecting anything to happen with it. It was just like I did it for cathartic reasons, to feel good about closing my blog down, I guess. And I used to teach classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen on it and whatever. And she had found my book. So yeah, I got this email from my now editor, who said that she wanted to buy the book, the whole thing, like my photos, everything, and that she wanted to buy it in like a month. Like, and I was 7 months pregnant at the time and moving to a new city and all this crazy stuff. And so that's a totally crazy story where really what I had wanted in my career happening at the same time in the time of, well, it just really did happen that way. But, you know, I was very lucky. It was serendipitous, really.
Right, that's crazy timing.
Yeah, yeah. And oh, also moving out of New York, yeah. It was really sad and weird, and, you know, being alone, and, again, my friends, and, I mean, you know, you said it yourself, having people over at our house was, like, it was so important to me, and it was a huge part of how I, like, relaxed and played in the kitchen, and it was, like, such a source of love and home, like, it was my home. And to just have that taken away and, you know, start working on like different projects and not having the people I love eating my food was really hard.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys moved because Garth got his first job as a lawyer in Texas, right?
Right, right. Right.
Which obviously when you're about to have a kid is super important. And I'm sure it was so helpful in some ways to have someone who had like a full-time job.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Our dynamic is really helpful. It has allowed, because I have, like, we have the straight job plus creative job dynamic, it has meant that, you know, in slow times or hard times, lately in the past, like, year or two, I've been able to make probably riskier decisions that I wouldn't have been able to make when I was in New York paying, like, you know, a full mortgage type yes. prices for rent. But, Yeah. So in Seattle, Dallas was a hard place for me because I didn't have any friends, and it was hard, and it was like starting being a mom, and it was an interesting dynamic. But now in Seattle, where there are like-minded people, we're friends with artists, we have a lot of similar like parent friends who are like, you know, doing cool things, and not being the only woman in a room who like has a job and is also a mom. That's been a really helpful and good thing for me, and not feeling so singled out as a freelancer, which in Dallas it just happened to be the dynamic of where we right. were. I know there are cool people who live there. We just didn't happen to have access to
them. Yeah, I feel like that's not as much the norm as it is in New York.
Right. Right. And I was in New York, I feel like everybody, you go into a party, or like, you know, when I would have people over at our house, no matter what it was that they were doing, everybody was chasing some sort of dream. And like, I just want to have conversations with people like that. And those were not the conversations I was really having in Dallas. But we're finding them again. We are finding them again. I still miss my home. I still miss my friends. It's New York still is home for my heart, but it just realistically with the two kids, you know, going back to New York, it felt like it really felt like it was going to be a really hard thing for me selfishly. It felt like I was going to be moving back to New York with these expectations for my friends and my work, and then I wasn't going to be able to do any of those things to the level that I was used to before I had kids, and I didn't want that to fall on me. You know, I was going to be the one who would have to make up the difference just financially. And I knew that that's a lot of pressure creatively to just like, I was going to have to maybe start, you know, take like a full-time job again as a recipe developer or a food editor. And I wasn't really wanting that life after my time away and experiencing things differently as a more like out of New York paced freelancer.
So can I just, out of like talking about like the nitty gritties of how people structure their lives, How are you guys figuring out childcare with two kids now? Like, are you able to do a lot of your work with them at the same time, or do you need to get some space to be able to write and everything?
Well, what I can say that is definitely true since I've had kids, I used to be very precious about my writing process, you know, like, oh, everything has to be quiet and I need, you know, this time and I need a cup of tea and I need everything to be so perfect. And now, I mean, I've gotten really good at just like, you know, oh, I'm mid-sentence in a paragraph and I got to stop because someone's woken up from their nap and okay, cool. And then like, I'm really good at dialing back into that headspace much faster now. So thanks, adaptive brain.
You got to do what you got to do. Yeah.
But, childcare, I mean, I was very lucky, with $20 20 minute meals, as I said, it was like already basically written. And with this cake book, Henry, my first kid, was like, he's just a really good sleeper. He napped really well. So like I knew what my day was going to be like. Like I knew where my pockets of time were and I could just, you know, dial in really quickly and make really good use of it. And I have not found that to be true since my second son, Theodore, was born. It's been a lot harder.
Yeah.
Having two kids means there's just no downtime. Like, yeah. One kid naps, and so I've had to start. I'm on deadline in December is my next book, my manuscript is due, and to reach that finish line, I've, you know, had to talk to Garth and my husband and, you know, various other caregivers that we have in our lives, just random people being like, hey, I need to figure out like a mommy's helper situation because I need time to write.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard when you like are working out of your home because there's not that clear delineation. Okay, this is the time.
The boundaries.
Where I am not accessible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, toddlers who broom trucks throughout every room of the house or, you know, need help wiping their butt or whatever. It is a hard thing, but good too.
Can I ask about, like, when you were self-publishing that book and when you were freelancing more in New York, because I think this is applicable to all sorts of freelancers in the arts, did you find any challenges or tools or tricks for asking for what you were worth in those situations? Because I know it's a hard thing to do.
That's a really good question. The answer is no, not I don't think I have ever done a great job with that, but the confidence and what little strides I did make in that area were just befriending other people. I've been very lucky to have some lovely mentors who have just been very open with what can be expected of, you know, me and learning the ropes and all that kind of stuff. So I've identified a couple of people and I've had to, like, you know, put on the big girl panties and like ask people questions that you know, seem uncouth or whatever, like asking, you know, what rates are and, you know, how protecting yourself and realizing that actually if you charge less for your work, you're actually bringing down your whole industry. You know, you're actually doing your friends a disservice if you don't protect what they work for. So once you think of it that way and you're part of a community, then it's like it feels less icky, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're helping your team, you're doing the right thing.
Awesome. Do you feel like you're running your own business?
I've often felt, and I don't know if actors feel this way, I'm not sure, but so I feel like I have two different jobs, actually. I feel like I've had the job of just doing my actual work, you know, like writing recipes and food styling, whatever I'm doing at the time. And then I have the job of managing my brand, and that is something I don't like to do at all. You know, like, I don't like promoting myself.
Right.
I don't like writing, you know, Facebook posts and Instagram stuff. I mean, that's not who I am. But when you get a book contract, like, I've literally been coached by people that they have expectations that you have to be doing these things a certain number of times per day. And, you know, so for me, that is not, it's not an obvious thing. Like, so what? I like to write recipes. I like to tell stories. But, you know, for some people, like, that kind of self-promotion is a little bit more seamless. You know, they have a community. They're like sending the word of something that they're saying out into a group of people that respond to them and like support the things that they're saying. It's not just being shouted into a void and saying right. something because someone told me to. It's a very different. So that aspect, I do feel like I've been running my own business in addition to being a weird, like, marketing person for myself. Right.
It's really hard to get a hold of that stuff.
Yeah, and I just don't like it.
And I feel like it changes all the time, too.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how to use Boomerang. What is Boomerang? Like, it looks cool, but I don't know what it is.
Or like Instagram live feed, like Snapchat, yeah. All this stuff.
I don't know.
You know, like, I don't know. I try to, like, disconnect from, like, TV and the internet as much as I can to stay quiet and to stay focused on my goals, like, of food and thinking about other people and, like, not getting confused by all the stimulus and stuff, but that's really hard. That is literally antithetical to what they need me to do. So right. That's been a challenge.
Have they, because I know everybody has to deal with that social media stuff now. Have you gotten any good advice from these publicists about doing it?
Well, I feel like, well, again, it's just a little bit different with this cake book and having a subject that people actually, like, more readily want to engage with. It's just, it's a little different. The advice that I've gotten, no, not really. Mostly, like, they just prescribe things onto right. me, like telling technical. Me what to do. Yeah. And that is that isn't very helpful because I'm aware that I need to do it.
But I love that you're doing something so physical that I literally you posted that little video of how to butter and flour a cake pan earlier today, and I watched it like 5 times because I was like, this is so, this like fast forwarded video of flouring a cake pan. I was like, this looks amazing.
Those are I can watch a good high speed video of someone decorating a cookie like on loop for hours. I love that shit. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I don't have that part sorted out at all, so I don't really know how to do it. All I can say is I've been sharing more now since I've been on book tour, mostly because I find myself with pockets of time where people don't want to engage with me. Maybe it's because like. And I'm alone. I'm just, like, alone a lot more.
Right.
I've been sharing what I've been doing, and I've been getting more response, and I've been connecting with people, and I've been using it as a tool to connect to the crowds that I'm with. So saying, like, hey, if you make a cake, I'll post it on my Instagram feed. I'm really proud of you. This is really exciting. I like that aspect of it, and that's been working well for me lately. I don't know how it's working for other people, but it's working better. I feel like I'm having more interesting things to say.
Yeah, well, and since you're on the tour, it's easy to kind of build off of those platforms that you're already getting, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. That part has been really nice. And again, using it as a way to, like, just continue connections with people, that has been helpful. But before, again, when I'm just, like, shouting into a void, being told what to do, that has been not great.
What did you major in college?
I was a comparative literature major.
And when did you decide? Did you decide to go to culinary school since you were studying in Paris? Or what was the...
I'm a stereotype, yes.
Because you were in college for the whole time in Paris, right?
Yeah, exactly. I went to a 4-year university, but I happened to graduate in 3 years. So I took my fourth year and went to culinary school and, you know, did all that kind of stuff. And then started off, I'm sort of the first generation of what I do, food editorial people, who... like set out to do this. Historically, the people who do what I do often were like working in a newspaper in the like travel section, and then the travel section got eaten up into the food section, and they suddenly find themselves as food writers.
Right.
So now, like, there are actually people who like go to culinary school to be food writers, and I was sort of at the very beginning of that, and I was very fortunate to be very very young. You know, since I graduated a little bit early, I like, you know, got right in with Martha and did that whole thing early on, a big break. And that has, my whole career has sort of fallen from that one thing.
That's Martha Stewart, if anyone doesn't know.
Yeah, Martha Stewart. Sorry, it's, you know, capital M Martha in my world.
Yeah. So you were working on her magazine, right?
Yeah, Everyday Food magazine. It doesn't exist anymore, but that was awesome because it was basically a tiny cookbook that was published at it. I mean, I guess all food magazines are, but this just was very dense with recipes, and so they just literally needed people to be profusely writing all the time. So I was like young and hungry, and just able to produce a lot. So that was very helpful. That set standards too for my, like, you know, motivation, I guess.
Yeah. This is a technical question, but can I ask about self-publishing that book just for anyone else out there who might want to do something like that at some point?
Yeah, well, and I didn't know what I was doing. I really didn't. So I basically, you know, had to do a lot of research on the various components. So, like, when you're self-publishing a book, at least back when I did it, which now I guess is, like, I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm sure some things have changed, but...
A lot, yeah, so now there are,
like... Was it, like, 2010? 2009?
Yeah, 2010? Yeah, that sounds right.
Because I remember you asked me to test a vegetarian recipe, and I remember which apartment I was living in at the time.
That's true. I remember. That's awesome. Good memory. So I had to, like, I did all the legwork that companies now do for you. So there are, like, publishing companies, like Blurb is a good one. People who, like, already choose various types of binding and paper quality, and, you know, they already have, like, will show you what their photos will print like and all that stuff. Well, I hadn't identified a company like that when I did this, so I did all of that work by myself, so that was a little bit hard. But so I just literally found a printer. I did some research. I found a printer online, and I got samples, and I, like, you know, held them in my hands, and I decided that this was, like, the size of a book that I wanted. If I printed, you know, 500 of these versus 200, what price break would occur and all that kind of stuff. So, again, there are literally companies that do this now, but I didn't have that back then. And so then, just someone being nice to me. That's what it was. Someone holding my hand and walking me through it.
And then did you just start selling it on your website, or did you approach other platforms?
Well, no, that's a good question too. That was a hard component, which I do think ultimately is what sort of got me the street cred to get my book deals that have followed is, I like went in Brooklyn. I knew my market was, like, for this book was all my friends, all the people that I wrote those recipes for were all living around me. And so I went to, you know, the Brooklyn Kitchen, for example. I went to, like, you know, local places. I was like, hey, yeah, I live in Brooklyn. I just made this. I was calling it a zine at the time just because it felt a little hipper than, like, my little book. Brooklyn Kitchen just really latched onto it and sold a bunch of copies. And then I just took that success and, like, took it to other, like, local bookstores and stuff. And I was really trying to do something a little bit closer to home, like, and that was really important to me to connect with more local, you know, very close by, literally close by me places. So it was literally just walking in, showing people the books, and then, like, having people, like, leaf through it and say no too, which was neat. It seems crazy now telling, it sounds really, you know, premeditated looking back on it now, but at the time I was just like, yeah, shit, I just spent money on this thing, I gotta see how I can get it into people's hands, I don't know, no one cares about me online, so what am I gonna do?
I love that though, because I feel like you said, like, food brings people together, and everything's online now, so it's really precious to find those opportunities where even you just, like, walking into the bookstore and actually talking to somebody.
Yeah.
Like, those things are few and far between now.
And it was pretty cool because, so I actually remember sending the book out to my now editor. I remember, like, freaking out because it was an address from a New York City publishing house. I was like, oh shit, this is going to a publishing house. So I had my book because I could have it in my hands, and it was pretty thin and I could pop it in the mail pretty easily. So all the people I'd cultivated throughout my career, I sent them copies and asked them if they could write a quote about it just for me to share on my website or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when I got this book order from a publishing house, I printed out all of my quotes and I folded the piece of paper in half and I shoved it in the book and I sent it along without any other note or anything. I, you know, played dumb. And I got a call, like, that was when I got a call, like, 2 weeks later or whatever.
That's amazing.
On the way to Dallas. So everything, you know, for me, it really, I've been very, very fortunate that the amount of effort that I've given at the various points of my life to things that have meant something to me have sort of culminated in something that, you know, has led to an actual career that I wanted.
That's amazing. How has your family reacted to your career as a freelancing chef? Are there any other creatives in your family?
Yeah. Yes. I feel like, I mean, any disappointment that they would have had to process of me not having like a quote unquote straight job or whatever, that happened when I went to culinary school. You know, they didn't see that one coming for me, which is silly. Looking back now, I used to like develop recipes for fun my whole life. Like that is all I've ever done. And I'm exactly the same person now as I was when I was like 10.
Oh my gosh.
Frankie knows.
I know.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were really scared for my decision when I was in New York. After when I worked at Martha, I felt like there was, felt like there was some purpose and there was an institution that was backing what I was doing. So they felt like secure in my decision and whatever, and including myself, I felt secure in it too. But then afterwards, when I was a freelancer, I feel like there was definitely pressure to, you know, cut bait and, you know, maybe give up or, but it was hard, you know, people supported. I mean, I just never let grass grow under my feet just because I guess I'm that kind of person who likes to move forward. And I was putting that pressure on myself also, and
right,
just wanting to see what was coming next. And, they've been proud of me. I mean, it's weird that I'm like this 50s housewife person. I did not set out to be that person.
I don't know about that. Just because your books are about cake doesn't mean that you're...
No, but I'm a woman who cooks from home. Mm-hmm. It seems like in Dallas, certainly, it was hard to explain that in a way that didn't just come across like very, very stereotypical.
Right.
And that was an ego trip for me. I wanted to be like, no, I do, like, I'm legit.
This isn't how I picture myself.
yeah, exactly. So it's been a growing, weird growing experience for me. And I know that's true of all artists. And I really do appreciate you identifying me that way, because I do, in my heart, I definitely do identify that way.
Well, that's why I asked you to be on. And you're just such a hustler too. And like, there's so much overlap between what we do that, yeah, I'm fascinated.
Well, that's why I like exclusively cultivate, you know, artist and actor friends, because
and we're always hungry, so it works out well for everybody.
Literally, exactly.
We will not turn away delicious free food.
Exactly, and it's always my pleasure.
Well,
I love it so much.
I know your parents have been really helpful, like as being the grandparents while you're traveling, right?
Yeah, literally.
Even though you guys don't live near each other.
No, they live quite literally as far away from me as they could. They live in Florida, and I now live in Seattle, so it takes, like, great plane flights and a lot of money and time to go see each other and stuff. But, in that sense, so for me being on book tour, now my next book is, like I said, it's a Spanish cookbook, so I'm having to go to Spain.
When are you going?
I'm going in like 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness. Sorry. Just got excited there.
It's exciting. It is exciting. It's a lot of eating. It's a lot of sitting around at a table and not writing the entire time, which is very stressful. And I gotta be cool, because I'm with a Spaniard who, like, these are all of his friends. I can't just be like the hustler American the entire time. I have to be cool. Which I have a hard time with sometimes. But yeah, no, my parents, my dad specifically, who is retired, is so helpful and so generous with his time to take care of the kids. And he sees it as like this wonderful privilege, and he just has really like leaned into that role, really, really loves it, and sort of flashes forward to this like already nostalgic thing with the kids, like, oh, they're gonna have summers with their grandparents, and that's so nice, they'll have memories. And I appreciate that, because for me it's very helpful, but
right, and necessary right now.
Yeah, literally, because also for me to be able to be on tour and just know there's no one else I would be able to trust my children with for a month at a time.
Right.
You know, like, I have to believe that they're in good hands and, you know, they're having a great time. And Henry does not, my children do not miss me. Henry and Theodore, they don't miss me. That's the only reason why I can do it.
Yeah. I'm sure your parents are spoiling them rotten in the best way.
They literally, Henry, I'm not kidding, he literally gets chocolate milk anytime he wants it, any time of the day, at any meal.
Hey, whatever works.
It's true.
That's really beautiful. I'm trying to think. I took some little notes. I'm trying to think what else there was I wanted to talk to you about. Are there any topics that come to mind that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I guess what I would like to say is that I feel like even these stories, they wrap up into like nice little units and stuff, but there have been a lot of times that have been, you know, down and out, and literally believing that I was not like that my cookbook career is over.
Yeah.
Believing that I was going to be a mom when my kids would be like, I had this terrible dream over and over about my son saying to their friends or something, just like, oh, hey, did you know my mom has a cookbook? Isn't that weird? Like, and I was like, oh, that can't be my life. I have to figure it out. So, you know, there are definitely dark times, and food does help for sure. And community definitely helps, but it's not like, again, in a couple of sentences, it all sounds like it's just gone really seamlessly and stuff. And no, right. The dark periods can last for a long time. And even my hustling, like, for example, in Dallas, this thing that you seem to be admiring me for, this hustle or whatever, I mean, it does take other people. Like, you can't do it in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And I was trying to collaborate with some people in Dallas and do some different projects. And I had the bottom fall out of a couple of things that was just really, really heartbreaking. And I just got swallowed into self-pity, being like, look at me, I'm trying so hard and it's just not working. And, you know, it's always worked out for me. Why is it not working now? I've had moments of that, but, you know, it's a pretty toxic place to live in for an extended period of time. So, I mean, the best thing that I could do is just like, all right, cool. I'd have to move on to the next. I have to think of something else to focus on. Something else. I try to do something that like doesn't make me any money at all. Just something that's like dorky and makes me really happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, for example, I was going to self-publish this magazine, all on like food trash was what I really wanted to do, because that seemed like something I would like, my national magazines and like my big books and stuff. You could never write a full length book on that. And no national magazine that I work for would ever publish a story on that, but it doesn't mean that I don't have things to say or think it's a cool subject or whatever. So I try to do things like that. And blogging, for me, it's so loaded. Blogging is no longer that place for me, because I just feel like it too is like already been tainted. Like, blogs, people expect to see certain material there at a certain rate and all that kind of stuff.
It's become a huge industry now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if I like blog a lot, then people like reach out to me to do like sponsored posts and stuff. And I have no interest in doing that. No offense to people who do. It's just not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And not the direction I want to go in.
Right.
So yeah. So my place where I find exciting projects is like, you know, connecting with photographers and just like having test shoots and saying like, hey, I really want to do like a really disgusting photo shoot about like food rot, you know, or whatever it is, something that I could never ask, you know, you know, doing crazy, crazy oddball things. And I try and keep that well pretty full, because just writing, you know, 1,000 recipes at the end of the day, it all seems like, you know, meatloaf and, you know, lasagnas. And it also, in my line of work, everything can seem contrived, you know, because what is my recipe for meatloaf saying different than someone else's recipe? So I have to also keep my like creative well flowing with cool and different things. Otherwise I feel like I'm just saying the same vaguely vapid thing over and over, which gets very dim. So that's another thing.
If you only focus on like the glossy and what can sell.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly.
That well is going to dry up really quickly. Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you. For those days when you're feeling really down, are there like concrete things that you reach for time and again, like a book or an album or something?
Well, my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, having them, having my husband, you know, having my friends and my husband, actual sources of like creative inspiration. It's really cheesy image, I guess, but as you know, I used to be like vaguely a performer in other walks of my early life. So I still love to, you know, crank some Ella Fitzgerald and just like sing the shit out of anything in the kitchen. I love that. And I do that all the time. So just like bringing joy back into just like also doing something pretty physical and like at times boring. Like if I don't want to cook a recipe, it can be hard to actually like get it up to want to like turn the stove on and actually do it. I could be feeling lazy. So making it fun by, you know, like singing, like serving friends to make it, you know, new and fresh. And
yeah,
my point is like, I can't be focused on who approves of my work. You know, like getting another book deal or getting some big client or whatever. I can't focus on that or else I literally go crazy.
Yes, I think that is a universal truth for sure. And then the last question is just usually, do you have any recommendations? So that could mean anything. I don't know if you've seen something recently or read something or there's a recipe you want people to go cook. Obviously the Cake Magic book, but besides that.
Oh, well, I mean, Cake Magic, it's fun, but I'm trying to think of people that I like to consume that feel really close to my heart. You know, I actually feel like Seattle, there are a lot of Seattle bloggers and food writers that feel like they've welcomed me to town, even though they actually haven't, but their work and stuff that stands before them is very, you know, they have this voice. And, you know, Molly Weisenberg, for example, like, I just really love her and I really connect to her work really immediately. And, you know, there is the storytelling aspect and I like, you know, live nearby and the some of the same sources as her is kind of fun.
Right.
I don't mean just like food. I mean like that we're actually like experiencing some of the things food-wise together in the same part of the country is kind of fun.
Cool.
So yeah, I really like people who do a really good job with them. I mean, MFK Fisher is one of my idols. And it's funny, I don't talk about her a lot because to food people, it's like so boring. But she is sort of I consider her the original cross-section of like food and literature. She's a great storyteller, beautiful, beautiful food writing, and very literary. So, you know, it fills me up to read her, and it reminds me of why I like to do what I do, just to make it simple and like be honest and connect.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely look those people up. Well, Caroline, thank you for doing this. It makes me so happy to hear about what you're doing, and it's really, really exciting. Thank you.
Thank you for letting me participate in what you're doing.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.